Good afternoon. This is Rick Hansen in the Environment Finance Committee meeting. It is not a conference committee, and it's not a working group, but we are going to walk through the work that has been done over the last few weeks, reconciling House and Senate and executive branch positions on a variety of topics. So welcome. I know there's a lot of interest in this bill, and I want to thank all of the folks who have been working on this very difficult, challenging, but I believe ultimately successful bill that does problem solving for Minnesota. When the House version of the bill left the floor, we talked about a series of acronyms that are familiar to many of us in the environment finance area, EAB, CWD, and AIS. And this bill contains provisions relating to AIS, aquatic invasive species, CWD, chronic wasting disease, and EAB, emerald ash borer, at levels that have not been seen before. And that has been the result of a tough and deliberate working through the differences between the House, the Senate, and the executive over the last few weeks. So there are a number of people involved. I want to thank all of them. I've been up late, so remembering each name at this point is going to be difficult. But I particularly, though, do want to thank Peter Strohmeyer for making sure that everything works not only on time but accurately. He has been up very late working on things, and I want to thank him for that work. So. And our nonpartisan staff who are going to walk through the bill have been there longer and later than the rest of us. So I want to personally thank Janelle Taylor and Brad Hagemeyer for their work. So Janelle, do you want to maybe I should just talk a little bit about what happened before we start on that. So we were in conference committee. I know some of you may have been at the Senate walkthrough last night. And as we approached the end of the regular session, there were a number of activities where we actually passed policy in the conference committee. So you, for those of you who were there or those of you who were not there, and by the way, it's good to be back in the House hearing room where we can be on TV and have a good sound system. We had hearings where we passed policy provisions, and we chipped away at policy provisions over the 3 weeks of negotiations. So the lands bill was adopted early. Representative Fisher's collaborative clean water legacy policy provisions were adopted earlier. Representative Fisher working with Senator Johnson. And then there were provisions that were adopted at each step of the way. And so when it came time near the end where the leadership of the governor, the Senate Majority Leader, and the Speaker of the House said no more policy provisions, we had done a lot of policy. And the last policy we were supposed to adopt by 5 p.m. In the conference committee on Monday, and we adopted the last agreed-upon policy provisions at 4:59 p.m. On Monday. So we got some agreement right near the end there. On May 21st, and members in your packet, has been handed out, and for those that are in the public, and I tweeted this out yesterday morning, there is the agreement, environment and LCCMR leadership agreement of May 21st. And these are provisions that were adopted. You will see the signature, the initials for the governor, the Speaker of the House, and the Senate Majority Leader. So this has some finance, some policy, and I think I want to note the LCCMR recommendations and keeping the LCCMR, the Environmental Trust Fund, pure. That had some consequences, which you see with money becoming available on the bottom line, and those are the handwritten notes that were decided. Those are appropriations that were decided by the governor, the Speaker of the House, and the Majority Leader. So following this, The executive branch and the Senate and the House met. Most of these meetings were between myself and Senator Ingebrigtsen, and at the end, the commissioner of DNR and the commissioner of PCA and Ms. Sobotka from the governor's staff, along with Mr. Strohmeyer and Mr. Fisher from Senate Council. That's pretty much near the end as working at negotiations. There were some final negotiations relating to the LCCMR because after this allocation, there were additional dollars on the bottom line, which we will talk about as we go through the LCCMR provision. And then we closed up the bill, and it was signed by the commissioner. Senator Ingebrigtsen was on the phone during the final negotiations, and so Senator Gazelka signed on behalf of the Senate. And so the spreadsheet that I tweeted out yesterday was signed by Commissioner Stroman, Commissioner Bishop, Senator Gazelka, and myself as the agreed-upon spreadsheet. And we proceeded from there. And so I think our process today is we're going to have the walkthrough from nonpartisan staff, and then we'll have testimony from the commissioners, and then public testimony and questions. So. Proceed, Mr. Hagmeyer.
Mr. Chair, if you want, I can start with the spreadsheet. I believe you have two spreadsheets available to you. The one I'll be going through first is titled Environment Natural Resources Finance Special Session Revisor Number 19-5219. The bottom right corner should be date and timestamp 5/22/2019 at 8:28 p.m. The first page is mostly totals for the bill. Of relevance for this, you're looking at several sets of columns. The first set is kind of the description of change items, things like that. The set of number columns is the House, current or upcoming biennium. Small column is House, the tails. Next column, set of three, was the Senate position and the Senate tails. And then you'll see revisor number 19-5219 about two-thirds of the way across the page. That is what this bill reflects. And then the last set of columns would be the tails that are reflected through how this bill is structured. The numbers of note you'll see on line 12 on that column would be the net general fund, our target of $338,013,000. You can see our net general fund came in at that amount. The only other number I'll point out on the first page would be on line 8. You see an FY19 cancellation of legal costs for DNR. That helps us get to our net general fund number, but those amount is also reappropriated to DNR for the same purpose later in the bill. If you switch to the second page, I can go through the change items that are all included in this bill for the Pollution Control Agency. At the top, you'll see the totals for each fund, and then direct and statutory for each fund as well. The first thing that is included in this bill for PCA, you don't see it in the riders, but on line 69, of the legal costs that are appropriated to DNR, $700,000 may be transferred to the Pollution Control Agency. On line 83, we have recycling and composting grants. There's some reductions made from general fund items to help fund other things in the bill, a couple spots. There's a $75,000 reduction in fiscal year 21, and then the tails have reductions of $400,000 per year, but there is appropriation of environmental fund for these same amounts you'll see in a minute. And that is all of the general fund changes at PCA. If you go down to line 89, you'll see the first of the environmental fund changes. The first change is, like I said, that same $75,000 and $400,000 increase in the tails for the recycling composting grants. On line 90, you'll see an additional $500,000 of appropriation for the SCORE grants. That should bring them to $17,750,000 per year. On line 92, you'll see there's $200,000 one-time for the work related to the Section 404 assumption. Line 93 is the air appropriation increase. That's environmental fund as required by the federal law. On line 94, there's an extension of a PFA assistance appropriation. Again, that's one where we cancel it and reappropriate it. On line 96, the business-friendly data services, that is, this was the governor's proposal. The House carried it starting in the second year, but this is included at $800,000 per year. Line 97 is the St. Louis River Area of Concern. It's $484,000 the first year, a little bit lower amount in the tails, and this is to continue some work that they had money for the past 3 years. Line 98 is recycling market development. This is a new appropriation of $400,000 per year. Line 99, there's been a bunch of discussion of the TCE stuff, and there would be, this is the appropriation to deal with some of the work related to TCE at the Pollution Control Agency, and it's $393,000 per year. If you go down to line 102, you see the county feedlot training curriculum of $300,000 is included. Under that, on line 103 is the food waste reduction grant program of $750,000 per year from the Environmental Fund. Line 104 is the appropriation for flame retardant chemical use, the prohibition of that. It's $141,000 starting in the second year and ongoing. And then line 105 is enhanced lead and asthma activities for $200,000. It's a one-time appropriation. If you go down to line 107, there's a couple of things for the remediation fund. There's an appropriation that the governor had requested for the vapor intrusion and contaminants of emerging concern of $605,000 per year. That is included. There's a solar on closed landfill study. The Senate had this as a position out of the closed landfill fund. It's being appropriated out of the remediation fund, $300,000 one time. Line 109 is extension of the closed landfill investment fund appropriation from 2 years ago of $1.66 million. You'll see a cancellation later in the revenues. And then if you go down to line 112, 13, and 14, there's a few special revenue or things labeled there. The only one that is still in effect here would be the railroad and pipeline safety reinstatement that the Pollution Control Agency does, but it's related to things that happen in other bills. That is it for the Pollution Control Agency. If you flip to the third page, I can start going through the Department of Natural Resources. All of the operating adjustments were included for the Department of Natural Resources. You'll see on 149, line 149 is the general fund of $4.819 million for the current biennium and $6,002,000 for the tails. And then if you go down to line 174, you'll see the total operating adjustment. All those in between there are various dedicated accounts that also have operating adjustments coming out of them. It was $15,915,000 in the current biennium. You'll see a few reductions up on lines on line 151, 152, and 154. Those were part of the agreement where there would be base reductions in the tail to make the tails number work. And some of those are shifted to non-general fund items. Starting on line 177 is protecting our public waters. It's $400,000 per year out of the general fund. On line 179 is sustaining Minnesota's white-tailed deer. There is $1.87 million out of the general fund in the current biennium, $550,000 in the tails number. And then the full amount that was requested by the governor is appropriate, but there's a chunk of it that comes out of game and fish now that you'll see in a minute. Line 180 is the legal cost of $2.7 million that I mentioned earlier. Part of that is transferred, and part of that was from the cancellation. Line 182 is the change from the Department of Administration to the DNR for the Office of School Trust Land. That's just the same amount, just now being carried under DNR instead of the Department of Admin. You switch to page 4. The first appropriation you'll see is grants to cities for EAB quarantine. This was the house position, It's being funded at $700,000 one time. Line 185 is the No Child Left Inside program. There are a few changes to that, but it has $182,000 one time of general fund money, and it also receives, you'll see later, $318,000 of Game and Fish Heritage Enhancement money one time. So in total, it gets $500,000 appropriation, but there are a couple of grant programs that kind of now fall under that too. Line 186 and 187, you'll see $100,000 for Robards Lake and $50,000 for Lake Elysian storm debris removal. And as you can see, that was one of the things that were included on the leadership agreement that was passed out. The next change item you will see is on line 200, the Walter F. Mondale dedication. It would be $75,000 from the general fund. There were no watercraft fee increases included in this bill on the line 230, but there was an invasive species surcharge increase. It's currently $5. It'll now be $10.60. And that results in $880,000 more being appropriated to the DNR for their work. Line 207 is protecting our public waters. This was There's some fee increases for DNR in this purpose, and this is the appropriation of those funds. Line 208, you'll see $1 million per year for forest management. This was the increase the governor proposed. And then part of the shift you see on the from the general fund was picked up in the tails on this appropriation. The Balsam Bow account expansion is included. It's just a little bit of appropriation for that. There's a number of ATV provisions. There's an appropriation increase to DNR. Some of it goes to the agency for their work, park and trail work, but then there's also $125,000 per year for the enforcement division. So it's $625,000 the first year, $925,000 each year thereafter. Line 213 is the grant for the Quad Cities ATV Club Trail. That was $950,000 for 2 years, so $1.9 million total. The Voyager ATV Trail received $600,000. The Prospector Loop Trail and the Taconite Street State Trail, I have them as one line item here, but it's $2.4 million total. The off-road vehicle touring routes received $600,000 out of the ORV account. There were local trail grants, lottery and lieu. This was a reduction in those. It's just to make the account in balance. On line 218 is the appropriation increase out of the ORV account. It'd be for the agency's work, and this is the for related to ORVs. Line 219 is an increase for the zoo grants. It's just a pass-through fund through DNR. It's $30,000 each for the Como Zoo and Lake Superior Zoo under Minnesota Zoo. You'll also see they receive that $30,000 increase. Line 220 and 221 is the cross-country ski pass fee increase. That was a governor's request and the House carried. This is both grant aid and agency's work, the appropriation related to that. Line 220 was that special event account for trails. This is the appropriation related to that. Line 226 is off-highway motorcycle trail planning. This is one-time appropriation of $75,000 for that purpose. And then there's $150,000 for the grant to Mississippi River Northwoods Trail out of the ATV account. That's it for the Natural Resources Fund. If you go down to line 231, we start the Game and Fish Fund. There's a governor request for the ICE safety program of $176,000 per year. That is included. You'll see some higher numbers here now for the Sustaining Minnesota's White-tailed Deer. This is the other portion related to the general fund portion above. And a bunch of this does receive reimbursement from Pittman Robertson funds. You'll see later in the document. There's an appropriation for angler surveys to inform fisheries management. This comes out of the Game Fish Fund. It's $810,000 current biennium, a little over $1 million in the tails. Lines 234 and 235 and 236 are related to the deer license dedication, where $16 of each deer license gets dedicated into deer management account. This is the accounting for that. Line 238 is $100,000 for both for the 2 years, but it is not ongoing, out of the heritage enhancement account for the shooting sports facility grants. Line 240 is the trade in prohibited animal parts. This is for some education and outreach related to that. Line 241 is a MACERC appropriation, Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center. This is for early detection of AIS. It's $100,000 for 2 years out of the Heritage Enhancement Account. Line 242 is the adopted dumpster program of the Game and Fish Fund. Line 243 is the other appropriation that I mentioned earlier for No Child Left Inside out of Heritage Enhancement. Line 244 is firearms safety, archery and hunting and angling in the schools, and that's $500,000 one time. And then the next line would be 245 is the high school fishing league grants on the top of page 5, and both of those reference back to the No Child Left Inside. It was an amendment that was heard earlier in conference committee. Line 242 is a permanent school fund appropriation. This is how we're transferring that from admin to DNR out of that fund. That is it for the Department of Natural Resources. Starting on line 254 is the Minnesota Zoo. The only changes were the operating increase of $1.1 million in the current biennium, $1.25 million in the tails, and then there's the lottery and lieu increase I mentioned earlier of $30,000 per year. Line 271 starts the Board of Water and Soil Resources. They received their base adjustment from the general fund of $1.3 million in the current biennium and $1.1 million in the tails. There's $150,000 one-time appropriation for critical IT repairs and cybersecurity. And then there's a base adjustment for fiscal services. It's a little lower than requested at $120,000 per year. And those are the only changes at the Board of Water and Soil Resources. If the next would be the Metropolitan Council on line 298. The only change item is on line 303, and that's an appropriation increase of $600,000 per year out of the lottery in lieu account. If you flip to page 6, bottom of page 5 is the Science Museum. The numbers for it are on the top of page 6. There are no changes. They receive their base funding. Line 311 is the Conservation Corps. There are no changes. They receive base funding. Line 317 is Explore Minnesota Tourism. There was one change item. There's $60,000 one time going to the Community Event Grant Program. Under 327 is Administration, the School Trust Land Director. This is the portion of that transfer from admin to DNR. So you see a negative here for that number. It shows up in DNR. Line 333, you'll see an appropriation to Board of Animal Health, which usually falls under the Ag Committee, but there are some of the work for CWD was in this bill. So there's an appropriation of $120,000 in the first year, $200,000 each year thereafter. There's also some fees that go on top of that from the Special Revenue Fund of $115,000 each year. That's included there on 335, 336. If you go, you'll see there's no longer any of the contingent appropriations from 339 through 351. And then just kind of technical on the end is on line 355 are the revenues transfers. You'll see the air appropriation increase revenue. You'll see on line 362 and 363 some of the, there's a transfer from the remediation fund to the dry cleaner account to pay for some of the costs, and then you'll see there's also a study in the bill too. Some of the money is upfront, and then $600,000 of it is contingent upon some changes to the fund. The next two are the cancellations I mentioned earlier that were reappropriated. There's a transfer from the environmental fund to the remediation fund for PCA's work out of the remediation fund. That was it for PCA. Under DNR, you'll see the land sales, land bill is included in here, so there's some revenue related to that. On line 173 is the revenue increase related to the AIS surcharge. Line 174 is the revenue from the Protecting Our Public Waters fees. Line 175 is the special forest products revenue. Line 377 is the cross-country ski pass increase. Line 382 is the Pittman Robertson funds related to the white-tailed deer work. Line 383 and 384 is related to the deer management account that I mentioned earlier, the appropriation of that. The taking turtle provision modification should not be on there. That was an error on there. I will correct. Line 388 is the venison donation account. Line 390 is the legal cost cancellation that I mentioned earlier. And then line 393 and 394 is there's a statutory transfer from the water rec account to the invasive species account of $750,000 per year. This shows up as a complete repeal of that transfer. I think the intent was half of that, though. So we will see how that gets worked out going forward. There's a couple extensions on 403 and 405 of some permit school appropriations. And then I think I have the... I need to also adjust the fee for farm survey on 407. It should be $115,000 per year. And that is all for the Article 1 of the bill, the appropriations. You also have another spreadsheet, and I don't know if you want to go through LCCMR right now or if you'd like to go through the bill or how you'd like to handle that, Mr. Chair.
Maybe if Ms. Taylor could give you a break. we will be taking testimony, and I think, Mr. Schirmer, we have to be out of here by 1:45, so we've got some time. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair and members, do you want me to go through the policy article or the...
I'd like to go through the policy.
Okay. I'll just mention on the for language on Articles 1 and 2, there aren't any significant policy differences. I will note that the House had a few language differences in the LCCMR bill. The agreement was to go back to the LCCMR bill as recommended. So the changes in the language to the Loon Center and the additional language removing the ability for the fund to be used for wastewater for small cities, those two provisions were removed. But I'll go to, let's see, Article 3 then on the policy. That starts on 97 of the revisor document. And what I'm going to do is just highlight the differences between what passed off the House floor and this document. And I do also mention that in your packets you do have a tracking sheet. Some of those on the conference committee or who have been following along are fairly familiar with that. And I'll highlight what was taken out after I go through what's actually in the bill. So the first thing I would highlight would be Section 2 on the bottom of page 97. The House language had allowed the Department of Ag to determine what the reasonable amount to reimburse meat processors for their donated deer processing, but the Senate language is what was carried, and that would set that amount at $150. The next thing I'll talk about, in that House Ag bill, there was a number of CWD-related provisions. They were pulled into this conference committee, and there's a compromise language that was worked out between the House and the Senate, and this is what's carried in this document. The first section, Section 3, would establish some fencing requirements for farm survey. It would require immediately the all new fencing to be high tensile. It would also require beginning December 1st of 2019 that enclosed entry areas would have a redundant gate. There's also requirements that owners repair any deficiencies within a period of time to be determined by the Board of Animal Health, but not to exceed 45 days. There's the establishment of a reinspection fee if reinspection is required, and that would be one half of any annual inspection fee, and those are established later on in the bill. There's also a provision that states that if a facility experiences more than one escape in any six-month period or fails to correct a deficiency, that their registration may be revoked. Section 4, about the identification of cervidae, this is a compromised language. The House had originally if you look on lines 98.29 and 98.30, the House had changed when the ID would have to be put on the animal. Those changes would apply only to the whitetail deer, and then the elk and other cervids would stay under current law. And then also on Section 5, this is the inspection requirements. This establishes requirements for the Board of Animal Health to perform annual inspections. And then if you look on paragraph B of that section, this establishes the requirements for those inspections, including that there's a physical inspection of the fencing. Section 6 establishes the inspection fees. If you turn the page to 100, you'll see that it's $500 for those that are, you know, commercial operations or that are selling the ability to shoot the animals or that have more than one species. That would be $500. Annually, and then $250 would be for all other herds. Section 7 is what the House brought into the conference committee, requiring a person requesting a contested case hearing to do that within 30 days. And then Section 80, this is the just stating that a person whose registration was revoked by the board is ineligible for future registration unless the board determines otherwise. Section 9 is another CWD provision. This is requiring depopulation, and that would have to happen once the appraisal process for federal indemnification was completed or if they're not applying within a reasonable time, and that would be determined by the board. If there is a CWD inspection, they would be required to maintain the fencing for 5 years, and the fencing would have to be signed with biohazard signs. Section 10 is another CWD part of that package. It would allow the legislative committees to meet to go over quarterly updates from the board, the University of Minnesota, and Ag and Health and DNR. There's also subdivision 2 would establish a federal account for any money received by the government for CWD-related activities and then appropriate that money back to the board for those purposes. The next thing, moving on from the CWD, the next...
Ms. Taylor. Mm-hmm. Representative Beckerfin, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as folks know, we've talked about this issue at length here on the House side, and this is just a piece of it. I think there's also the Adopt a Dumpster program and some other things later on. Do want to acknowledge we did, this was one of the really longer discussions that we had in the conference committee regarding a chronic wasting disease, and unfortunately we didn't it wasn't able to be as strong as we would have liked it. There's some science-based things that we wish would have been in there. Some of the requirements about the, if CWD in section, in the mandatory depopulation section on section 9, does require them to keep fences up with biohazard signs, but only for a period of 5 years. And for anyone who's been following the discussions on this issue, we know that prions exist in the environment for much longer than 5 years. So happy that we made some steps forward, but there's still going to be work to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And in addition, this crosses into the account area, but the creation of the account to receive federal dollars. So when there is reimbursement for captive cervids after depopulation, that goes directly to the owner. But there's a lot happening at the federal level, at least in terms of bills being introduced. Some of that may be providing for reimbursement to the agencies for their costs. Or other efforts, there may be research dollars that could come in. So we felt that creating the account would be something in case when the legislature adjourns for good this year, that and we're not here, that there would be a way to receive federal dollars that could maybe enhance Minnesota's effort on responding to chronic wasting disease. And in the conference committee, you don't always get what you want, and so we think this is a compromise that is a beginning step but also provides for the future. And I think, and I see Commissioner Peterson just came in the room, I think it's probably farther than most, if not all, states have done, and so we view it as a first step in response. And also on the finances, it's a significant investment to respond, and having the general fund, all Minnesotans help pay for that response rather than just the hunting community. Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will add too, later on in the, as we walk through, we did put into statute the ban and import of hunter harvested cervidae. So there are some other things that relate to not just the Board of Animal Health, but things that the DNR and deer hunters will have to do differently. And again, I think it is a significant step, and you know, thank all the advocates who've pushed for this.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, as long as we're talking about the CWD issue, the Adopt a Dumpster program, I just wanted to point out for those who have been following along, the conference committee had originally adopted an uncodified section, the House position, but you know, staff sort of made a technical decision to move everything up into the rider, and so the rider reflects what the House language says. I just wanted to point that out, and you'll find that on page 32. But that would be the House language, but it's just ratified or whatever you want to call it.
Ratified.
All right, and then so if we're done with the CWD for now, we can go back to page 103. This is a new section that the Senate had brought in. This was heard in the House. Representative Morrison carried this bill that clarified the definition of roadway for purposes of endangered species protections. The next section I would point out would be on page 108. This is the first of several sections that are from House File 2253, that the DNR's 2018 policy bill that was heard and is on the general register. And all these sections that I'll be mentioning are the same as they were in the House bill. We just did not pass it.
Ms. Taylor, on page 103, there was I see we did get the technical correction that the trade in prohibited animal parts rather than animal parks has been corrected. And that was a House provision, I believe that was Representative Lee. Is that correct?
Yes, that was correct, Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
All right, so 108 was one of the first section, and this is it allows the snowmobile instructors to capture the fee from those taking the online training course. The next section I would point out would be on page 113, sections 24 through 27. These are also from that DNR 2018 policy bill. The first was regulating the harvest of gizzard shad. Section 25 on page 115 are some tagging requirements for commercial fishing equipment. These are those are for that are used in infested waters, and this is again from the 2018 policy bill. Sections 26 and 27 are pilot projects for allowing those putting docks in to store them off-site, and this is expanding those projects to all access sites on those two lakes, and this is again from the DNR's policy bill. On the bottom of page 116, this is when we were going through the spreadsheet, you saw the transfer from the water rec account to the invasive species getting removed. This is the language that does that, and it may need to be updated depending on what is agreed to here. Section 29 is a section, this is a modified section that the Senate had carried. They had required some holidays to be free to visit state parks. The compromise is to allow the DNR to pick three additional days to allow free access to the state parks, and that's that language. Section 30 is the first of the two sections on the Walter Mondale renaming. This is how it left the House floor, except there's on line 1.17.29, there's the acknowledgement of the existing statute that prevents the naming after those who are still living.
Ms. Taylor, on 117, I think the agreement looks like on 117.7, it says 4 days, but my understanding of the agreement, it was 3 days, and DNR is nodding their heads, so that's a technical correction. But in the bill language, it says 4 days. So, Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair and members, I guess we were under the impression it was three additional days. Right now, it's 1 day. Hmm. So we'll need to.
Commissioner Stroman?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Stroman, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sarah Stroman, Commissioner of Minnesota DNR, for the record. I can appreciate the confusion in the last hours here. The spreadsheet with the agreement that we all signed does say three free park days. So our understanding is that is three total days, and that reflects the conversation that we'd had prior to that point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You'll be back later. Right. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, the next section I would pick out is on page 119. It's section 34. This is the watercraft surcharge, reflecting the agreed upon $10.60 fee. Section 35 is the wildland firefighters training and licensing provision. This was mentioned in the agreement. It was also carried in the 2018 DNR policy bill. The next one I would point out would be on the bottom of page 124. This is some new language that was also part of the agreement. This would subject mineral leaseholders to certain provisions that apply to vendors. They would need to meet the definition of a responsible vendor that's required, and then they'd also be subject to suspension and debarment procedures under existing grant requirements. The next section would be the bottom of 125. This is another one from the DNR 2018 policy bill. no longer requiring them to provide a copy of the rules for each licensee. Section 48 on page 127, and this is the deer license revenue allocation. This is very similar to what the House had. There's just some additional language that was requested by the DNR on 127.20, allowing them to use this for the computerized licensing system. It also removes, the House had originally had language that renamed the emergency deer feeding account, and that is not being carried right now. The next section is on the bottom of 128, the section 51, and then also section 52. These are related to the elk licenses from the 2018 policy bill that were picked up. Section 53 on page 129 is the section that Representative Becker Finn had mentioned that banned the importation of hunter-harvested deer. The next section I'd like to point out would be section 130, on page 131, it'd be section 57, this would allow a person to use night vision equipment to take coyote and fox. The House had heard this bill, but this was a Senate provision that was picked up.
And Ms. Taylor, I think near the end there were discussions about making sure that the penalty or the enforcement language was in. Is that included?
Mr. Chair, no, I believe that was not agreed to.
Not agreed to. Proceed.
On page 133, there's section 59. This is a Senate section that was picked up. This removes the requirement that crossbows have a stock at least 30 inches long. The next section I would point out would be on page 135, section 63. This is a modified version of what the Senate brought into conference that allowed a person to use a bait to or a drum to bait bear on public land if they paid a $5 surcharge. This would allow that, but then does establish some of requirements for those drums, including require them to be permanently marked and removed within 7 days of the hunting season. It also provides a petty misdemeanor on the bottom of that page. You'll see that. The next section, I'll point out there was, if you remember, the House had a number of provisions on the allowing nuisance beavers to be taken. There's some beaver compromise language that has been adopted. So the first of that would be on the top of page 138, lines 138.4 and 138.5 would allow the beaver to be retained by those taking it unless otherwise directed by the conservation officer. And then the additional piece of that compromise, you can see that on line 138.118, it would require the tags that would be required on the traps to be provided by the local unit of government.
And that was the great beaver carcass compromise that Representative Purcell and Senator Johnson worked out. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, the next section I'd point out would be section 70. This allows the use of 410s to take turkey. This was a provision that the Senate had carried in. Section 71 is another one of those sections from the 2018 DNR policy bill related to the gizzard shad that was picked up here. The next section I'll point out is on the bottom of page 139, section 74. The Senate had carried this. The House did hear this. This is a Representative Bernardi bill that prohibits the DNR from imposing their restrictions on commercial fishing operators when they're doing AIS control efforts for local governments. Section 75 on page 140, this is a provision that the Senate carried that's picked up here, that this restricts Lake Minnetonka Conservation District from regulatory authority of marinas, and it just restricts it to that is done below the ordinary high water mark. The next section on page 141, section 76, the Senate carried this provision establishing statutorily a number of duties of soil and water conservation districts. The House had heard this, but it was on the general register and was not passed. The next section would be on 143, section 77. This increases the compensation rate for watershed district managers. The next section, 78 through 84, the Senate had carried the Mississippi Headwaters Board authority expansion. Representative Purcell had had this, but it was not in, passed the House, and those were carried here. If you want to skip ahead to page 145, this is another section that the Senate had brought in. This requires Bowser to set wetland banking fees based on the cost to the agency. The next section I'd like to point out would be on page 151. It's section 95. This is a provision that the Senate was carrying. It exempts water transfers that don't introduce new pollutants from NPDES permit requirements. The next section I'll point out is starts on page 157. It's section 105. The Senate had proposed requiring a project proposer to approve any extension of comment periods for EAWs. This compromise language would allow a responsible government unit to extend the comment period 30 days, but anything beyond that would have to be approved by the project proposer. The next section I'd like to point out is section 106 on page 161. Instead of establishing the Outdoor Recreation Office within Minnesota Tourism, the compromise was to establish an account at tourism that's dedicated for any gifts that are received for purposes of promoting outdoor recreation, and then it would appropriate that money back to the tourism for those purposes. The next section would be on page 162. It's section 109. This would exempt small townships from MS4 permit requirements until the PCA adopted rules. This is similar to language that was passed last year but not ultimately signed into law. Section 110 is another section that the Senate had carried. This would allow Bowser to complete planning frameworks and other program applications for federal approval of wetland replacement in lieu fee program. Section 111 on page 163, this would require the DNR to operate Hill Annex Mine until June 30th of 2021. It also would require them to work with stakeholders to develop a plan for the future and work with certain cities. You'll see that in paragraph B. Section 112 on the bottom of the page, this would require DNR to update the aggregate reclamation guidance. This was recommended by the task force last year, I believe. At the top of page 164 is another section that the Senate had that's being carried in this document. It would require the DNR to establish some basic angling curriculum and then provide that to nonprofit organizations operating high school leagues at no cost. Section 114 is a compromise on the, if you remember, the House had carried language that would require payback of the MLCAT account. This would require the PCA to study it and its long-term health and availability of that account. The next section on the bottom of page 164, this is another compromise. The House had carried language requiring financial assurance of certain waste tire facilities. This would require the PCA to conduct an analysis of the forms of financial assurance for those operators and report back to the legislature. Section 117 is the rest of the Walter F. Mondale naming provisions. It's slightly different than the amendment that was adopted on the House floor. Instead of a visitor center, the Wild River State Park would have a river trail named after Mondale. And I believe that concludes Article 3. I can continue with the remaining articles if you'd like.
Any questions? Representative Eklund.
I have one, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And it's probably quite a bit earlier in the bill. It's on page 30. I just want to talk about it for a minute, Ms. Taylor. For the Prospector Trail Loop system, It has it on line 31.2. It has it, the trail ending between Ely and the Purvis Forest Road Management. I just wanted to bring up, we'll leave the language the way it is. I'm not going to contest it, but I want to bring up that the intention of this Taconite or Prospector Trail Loop is to connect Ely and Tower. So, but maybe to let the chairman know and others, as well as anybody, that we'll be coming back to try to figure out how to make that happen. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Ms. Taylor? Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, the next article is the state lands article, and I'm not going to go through this. This is, there were only technical differences between what the Senate passed and what was on the general register, so this is should be fairly familiar to the members. Unless there's questions, I can move on.
You can move on.
Okay, and then Article 5, this is the Clean Water Legacy Act modifications. This was carried in the legacy bill on the House side, but the Senate had it in this Omnibus Environment Natural Resources Finances bill. There were a few differences between the two. This reflects a compromise. The biggest difference was the House had a provision establishing a goal of for all waters to meet their designated uses by 2040. That was not included in the final compromise. And then I believe that is all for this. If you want, I could just kind of point out what is not included. If just quickly go through the tracking sheet, otherwise, you know, take questions.
I'm just going to check with Representative Fisher if he had any comments on the legacy clean water part.
Just in terms of the modifications, it was just frustrating that an aspirational goal for 2040 to be able to make sure our waters are swimmable and fishable, they just would not be willing to accept. It was frustrating that we thought we had the agreement going into it, and after making some changes the Senate wanted, they seemed to abandon the rest of the agreement and not take this aspirational goal.
Ms. Taylor, or do you want Mr. Hagemeyer to take a break for a moment? And he goes.
Mr. Chair, if you want, I can go through the other spreadsheet. Would be Article 2 of the bill, the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund. That's the title of the spreadsheet, Special Session Revisor Number 195219. Time date stamp at 8:31 p.m. yesterday. I can just go through this fairly quickly and just tell you what changed. Basically, starting with the LCCMR recommendations as introduced, per the agreement that was handed out to you, you can see there were some notes on this. LCCMR adopt all current LCCMR recommendations plus 1.8 for CWD, and then they handwritten stuff down below. The $5 million LCCMR bottom line was in reference to not doing grants out of for PFA out of the trust fund appropriations, so that's where that money came from. But in effect, there was other money available because of the debt service that was passed earlier this year. So there's some projects that were specified here, and there were some others that were added. I'll just go through the changes here. The far right set of columns, Project 3Q would be the forest and bioeconomy research. That was one of the specified projects by leadership. Minerals and water research, 3R, or sorry, that was $2.2 million. Minerals and water research for $883,000 was added in. The native bee survey, that would be the Hanson ACOM note on the agreement, for $600,000. And then 3T, the chronic wasting or diagnostic test for chronic wasting disease, of $1.804 million, as specified in the agreement.
And Mr. Hagemeyer, so the native bee survey was a Representative ACOM bill that had been introduced and heard through the committee, and it was reflecting a proposal that had been, I believe, cut from the previous year's appropriation. And the diagnostic test is how we will now be referring to the research effort looking at a diagnostic test for chronic wasting disease.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And yes, as you mentioned, the native bee survey, it was a proposal in a previous year. It's slightly less. This is $600,000. I think the proposal is $636,000, and that's what the House was carrying earlier. Other changes on page 2 near the bottom, Project 4T is the managed aquifer recharge study for $350,000 as specified in the leadership agreement. Page 3 near the top, you have Project 5D is diversity in environmental careers. I believe that was a previous proposal as well, but that's $250,000. Project 6A has 1,000 added to it for the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center. Project 6C is $1 million for noxious weed detection and eradication. Project 6D would be EAB grants to cities. And that is 300,000. Near the bottom, you get Project 8G would be 900,000 for the agricultural weed control using autonomous mowers, and per the leadership agreement, that would be referenced as the Westrom 900K. We have to interpret things sometimes. On page 4, Project 9H, there's 50,000 added to the Britton Peak Duluth and Mountain Bike Trail. Halfway through that page, Project 9P, there is 200,000 for the Rainy Lake Recreational Access and Boat Wash. And then Project 9Q was $1 million for the Bruce Mine Park and Mesabi Trailhead. That would be the $1 million reference for Mesabi on the leadership agreement. Project 10D would be the grants management system for the LCCMR, and that's $330,000. And then if you'll see very near the bottom, what was referenced as the 11A, the Water Infrastructure Funding Program. It had LCCMR recommendations of $1.5 million, but since the agreement was not to do this, that was also removed from the proposal. In total, there's $2.94 million being spent in FY19 on these projects and $61,387,000 in fiscal year 20.
Are there any questions? Ms. Taylor, anything else?
Mr. Chair, I just point out on the tracking sheet, I don't have to go through it in the interest of time unless you would like me to, but starting on page 7, it lists the items that were not included that were originally, if you were interested in any particular one, they're listed there, unless you want me to go through it.
I would like you to go through it for the record.
Sure. So on page 7 of the tracking sheets, it says policy sections not included. The first would be the provision Representative Lee had carried about that would allow proceeds from settlement funds, 40%, to be dedicated to the community health boards. That section it was not included. As part of the State B, there was a second section that actually established the B as endangered and mentioned the national designations as well. That section was not included. As mentioned before, all the watercraft fee increases were not included. There were two sections carried in Representative Lippert's bill on the carbon sequestration. You'll see that those two sections were not included. One establishes the goal, and the other one had given some flexibility that a DNR to sell trees in smaller lots. Those two were not included. If you remember, there was some walk-in access changes. The DNR had proposed expanding the program, and then the House had additional language on the, getting rid of the donations. Those changes were not included. There was a provision that allowed those with a disability to no longer go through a permit requirement, and just as long as they had their handicap sticker, they could use a motorized vehicle in a WMA. That provision is not included. The provision on banning the use of neonics on WMAs was not included.
Ms. Taylor, just to note on that, we offered the Senate provision several times, which had a 5-year sunset, and that was opposed. I would note that the Federal Environmental Protection Agency just banned 12 neonic insecticides.
Mr. Chair, the House had carried a number of sections related to the removal of a turtle seller's license and some changes to the way you can trap turtles. Those sections were not carried. The provision that would have banned the open season on wolves was not included. The provision that would require the use of non-toxic shot and WMAs in the farmland zone was not included. The ban on the use of plastics for conservation purposes, that was not included. The carpet stewardship sections were not included. If you remember, there was some issue with the closed landfill investment fund and clarifying whether or not that was appropriated to the PCA, though that section was not included. The provisions reinstating the MPCA Citizens Board were not included. The salt applicator voluntary certification program provision was not included. TCE ban, that was not in the House Environment and Omnibus Bill, but had passed separately. It was lined up with the Senate's provision. That was not included. The flame retardant chemical was not included, but that was because it was passed elsewhere. So that was not included. Also with the exemption on the open air spine basin moratorium, that was why that one was dropped, but that was a Senate-only provision. The final House provision that was not included would be the naming of the Day McCoskey.
Any questions? Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, for the public's benefit, I do want to state for the record that the name designation of Bidet McCoskey was one of the items that the Senate was unwilling to negotiate about, and so that was why it was kicked up to the higher level. But we did have some really good testimony in the conference committee, some very compelling testimony about how important it would be to make this change, and just want to make sure that we have that for the record, that it would have liked to see it go forward as a member of the conference committee, and unfortunately it was one of those things that didn't work out, but thank you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just want to say that it's very disappointing that we did not have the provision in there to allow for settlement agreements payout to be brought back to the communities who has been impacted by permit violations. And also a disappointment that we do not have the TCE stakeholders group in here, and also the PCA community board, just in the sense that we are, you know, the Senate opposition is taking away the voice of Minnesotans, and we're not centering that when we have discussions around the environment and how do we protect the health of the public and everyone. So just wanted to put that on the record, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lee. And during, I think, one of the conference committee reports where we had meetings where we adopted a provision, I believe Senator Ingebrigtsen said there were four things that were non-negotiable because they couldn't be passed off the Senate floor. Those were the recreation of the MPCA Citizens Board, the lead ammunition prohibition on certain WMAs, the Bidet McCoskey, and the Mondale Park. If you look through the policy provisions, there's a lot of provisions that were adopted, but there were a lot of provisions that were not adopted. And tomorrow is another day. So, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know there's a lot of disappointment on the TCE issue. I know that there are a lot of citizens working up in our area that emailed me this morning. And I know that typically we don't allow for reading of things back and forth. This is a volunteer group who've come together over the last couple of weeks, and I'm wondering if I'd be allowed to kind of read, go through some of the things that they wanted to mention now, or would you like me to wait on that until you take testimony?
Representative Fisher, I'd like to get the commissioner's testimony in, right. So we've done that, and then I think we can do that. So,
okay.
Commissioner Bishop, Commissioner Stroman, if they would like to come forward, and Ms. Becker-Kudelka as well for Bowser. And the zoo, if they would like to come in. Who would like to go first?
I can. Go ahead, sure.
Commissioner Bishop.
Great. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much. This was a number of days of negotiations, and I will say that the MPCA feels like we've come to a good agreement here, and I wanted to thank everybody for your work, including the staff. And I will also say that it's really a pleasure sitting here with my colleagues. We worked well together, I think, in coming up with a bill that we could look at where what the Senate was looking at, what the House was looking at, and what the agencies and governor was seeing as needs for the administration. I especially want to thank the chair for the persistence and diligence that went into every minute of the negotiations. With the MPCA, you walked through many of the provisions. Some of the unique items in the bill that the House was looking at and were included the flame retardant prohibition, the feedlot training, the dry cleaner account funding, which we talked in detail about, which I think will help some of the small businesses in your district, the lead education enhanced lead asthma activities, and some of the unique Senate items that came about were Section 404 assumption, some of the SCORE grants, which I think are going to be good for counties, where we really looked at how to further the SCORE grants and recycling for the counties, feedlot training curriculum, which was shared with the House, solar study on landfills, and again, the dry cleaner account. A number of the governor's items were included in the bill that we're very pleased about. The TCE education awareness and working with the businesses. We do have that we've put forward that is funded in both bienniums that works with MPCA and the Department of Health to really help to go to those businesses to help them look at their TCE use, any implications of their TCE use, as well as offer alternative solvents through MnTap and resources through MnTap should the businesses be able to transition from TCE. In addition, governor's items, the recycling market development, which was much needed, the food waste reduction, which was a new item that was put forward, which I think, again, when we look at the recycling market and the food waste, this goes to our larger climate agenda as well, which will be helpful as we really work on building out that with the administration. Vapor intrusion, and then the air appropriation increase, among others. So with that, I just want to say thank you. I also want to acknowledge what's been said about the TCE and the White Bear and Gem Lake Township and what the water gremlin issue. This is something we take very seriously, and that's why we asked for the funding so that we could have extra staff to help not have this happen again. In addition, with the community groups, we have been meeting extensively with them, and we did identify a number of projects that they would want to look at, and other pieces that we've discussed in detail, as well as discussed with the Senate. And in my testimony, too, we talked about Representative Lee's bill, where a percentage would go back to communities. That is something that certainly we could look at in the future, but know that our commitment to Gem Lake and White Bear Township and working with those citizens actively will continue, and it is our intention as an agency to set up a task or a working group and task force with that community as well. So even without the language, it's something that we were going to do and we'll go ahead and do. I wanted to provide that reassurance. And I think that's all I have. So I just want to say thank you very much. My first session really coming through this, and it was a ride, I'll tell you that. Thank you for your patience with me, and thank you for working with all of us.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Bishop, for the words and for continuing to work with people and the strong support for Representative Foodley's language. I think that is something that's very critical going forward. One of the questions I have is I know that there's some money that's been appropriated for going out, reaching out to business. It'd be great if we could get a report going forward to see after, you know, at the end of this year is, you know, how many businesses were contacted, how many have moved over, how many are left to move over, so that we know where we are in the process. That would be greatly appreciated. Is that something that you'd be able to provide?
Mr. Chair and Representative Fisher, yes, that it's something I've already talked to the team about putting that program in place. We've already started some of the work, and right now we're prioritizing, and as I mentioned to you, on those businesses that may use a greater amount of TCE, as well as those that might be in environmental justice areas that could have a broader exposure to something like this. So we want to make sure, but we will provide a report.
Thank you.
Representative Eklund, and then Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Bishop, Commissioner Stroman, just one quick question. The Wild Rice Task Force language didn't make the final bill. Can you tell me when the administration will be done having their consultations with the 11 tribes and then start working on whether bringing industry and the other players into the conversation so we can finally develop a good plan dealing with wild rice?
Mr. Chair and Representative Eklund, those consultations are starting now. So it is our hope that from now until through the fall that we will have had those consultations and can go back to determine if the Stewardship Council is the proper place to look at these policies and how we go forward. But I think the consultations should be done. It's a matter of schedules at the moment for everybody and numerous other consultations that we're doing, but it our hope is to have them done by September or October.
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair, I don't really have anything to add beyond what Commissioner Bishop has already said.
Representative Eklund.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and for both commissioners, thank you. I appreciate it. I just ask that the committee members be kept informed of the process as it's going along, because there's a lot of interest.
Yes, of course. Thank you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Bishop. I just want to, just bring this forward that after having some discussions with some of the folks who are on the ground with the TCE situation too, that there are people who are working for Water Gremlin in this particular situation who may not particularly live in these communities that are directly impacted. So for any conversation going forward for you to engage with these individuals too, and my understanding is that most of them are from immigrant backgrounds and are very highly mobile community members and, you know, workers. And so for you to be aware of this and really do have true engagement with everyone that's impacted, you know, the surrounding communities and the employees of the company too. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lee, yes, of course.
Mr. Stroman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I, too, just want to add my thanks to those already given by Commissioner Bishop. We've had a lot of really good discussions this session, and we've had a lot of good discussions and long discussions here over the course of the past few days. And from the DNR's perspective, we feel that we have landed in a very good place with this bill. When we started this session, the governor laid out our budget that had a very strong link between his priority on prosperity of communities across Minnesota and our natural resources. And specifically, the goals in the DNR's budget were around protecting our natural resources, connecting people to the outdoors, making smart decisions with good information, and maintaining the agency's critical operations. And where we've landed in this bill, you know, our base budget is there, our operating adjustments are there. In terms of protecting our natural resources, you know, one of the very top priorities was chronic wasting disease and ensuring that we had adequate resources to respond swiftly and aggressively, ensuring that we had good policy in place, and ensuring, I think, that the research component is there so that we can continue to learn and continue to respond effectively as we know more about this disease. And all three of those components, as Chair Hansen and staff indicated in the walkthroughs, are there. This bill gives the DNR additional resources. It gives the Board of Animal Health additional resources. It strengthens some of the tools that the board and the DNR have in terms of the policy. And it also, in the LCCMR bill, gives additional resources to the University of Minnesota. So I think that's a very critical component of the bill, and I'm very appreciative of not only the work of the House and the Senate, but also our partner agencies in Department of Ag and the Board of Animal Health. And I know Dr. Thompson is here, too. So she's gotten to be welcomed into the environment committees and work with our agencies closely. And that, I think, has only strengthened our relationships and our ability to work together going forward. Aquatic invasive species was another very critical component of this, protecting our natural resources. And obviously, the inclusion of the enhanced AIS surcharge gives us resources to continue to monitor, continue to enforce and respond, and also allows us to reinstate our grants to local partners. And as we've discussed throughout the session here, that's a really critical component of this. And then finally, in this category of protecting our natural resources, the additional resources for our public waters program. We, both through the enhanced fees as well as through the general fund dollars, is really important to make sure that we can balance the conservation of our water resources along with the use of those waters. The inclusion of the angler surveys is one of the really critical pieces, ensuring that we have good information to make appropriate management decisions. And I think this is a really important issue in our fisheries as trends are changing, the use of electronics, the use of wheelhouses in the winter. And so we're very appreciative of having these additional resources. And then, as you all know, I'm very passionate about connecting people to the outdoors. Obviously, our original proposal of the cross-country ski passes was in here. But what I like about this body of work is this really was a blending, I think, of our priorities, the House priorities and the Senate priorities, with the No Child Left Inside and the firearms safety grant and the high school fishing league grants. And so it's nice to see that everybody saw this as an important aspect to the DNR's work, and there's a number of items in there. I think it's my understanding, Mr. Chair, that to the extent we have some technical items, and we did already address the one related to the number of free park days, we do have a couple other issues we'd just like to put on the record, and I'm going to defer that to Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner for DNR, to walk through those maybe after we do the testimony here. So, again, I think, you know, this really, this bill achieves the priorities that Governor Walz, Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, and the DNR had as we started the session, but I also think it reflects the work that we did together as the House and the Senate and the agency. So thank you very much for all the work of this committee, and to Mr. Chair for your work here, especially in the last few days.
Thank you. Any questions for Commissioner Sturman? Ms. Becker-Cadell.
Mr. Chair, Angie Becker-Cadelka, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I'm here today on behalf of Executive Director Jasky, who sends his regrets for not being able to attend today. So, Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for your work on this bill and in this session. As we know, Minnesotans expect a great deal from the state agencies charged with managing and overseeing our environment and natural resources, and it is a responsibility that we all take very seriously. As you mentioned, this committee started its work on policy improvements very early. Mm-hmm. House File 1244, the drainage bill that you authored, Mr. Chair, along with Representative Torkelson and Senators Weber and Eakin, has already been passed and signed by the governor. That bill took recommendations of the drainage work group, and as a result, it will streamline the Ag BMP loan program for drainage authorities to have better decisions and tools at their ready, and it also adds a voluntary alternative method for drainage system repair cost apportionments. The other policy that is in this bill is the coordinated water management. It's authored and championed by Representative Fisher here in the House, Senator Johnson on the Senate side. And it turned out to be a very technically complex bill. To connect the two parts of the statute, the Clean Water Legacy Act, Chapter 114D, and Chapter 103B, Water Planning and Implementation. It better serves our local government partners, and it was driven by the counties, the soil and water districts, and the watershed districts, who are all doing this work locally. As a result of this legislation, it will have increased pace of progress. It will better align plans between the two statutes. It will assure accountability, and it better links surface water and groundwater. We thank you for your time, your energy, your commitment throughout this session. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Becker-Gadelka? Ms. Hochstein.
Mr. Chair, members, Claudia Hochstein, legislative liaison for the zoo, here on behalf of Zoo Director John Frawley, who also sends his regrets that he's not able to be here. We thank you so much for your hard work that will ensure that we have a solid base that we can continue raising our two-thirds of our operating revenue. And also without those free day provisions, we're able to continue running our targeted access programs, make our own management decisions at the zoo, and ensure the safety and contentment of our guests who are visiting, as well as the surrounding community of Apple Valley. Further, we are also really glad to see that both of our LCCMR provisions made their way into the final bill. The work that our conservation staff is doing on conserving the Dakota Skipper butterfly will hopefully ultimately lead to others being able to replicate their successes and ultimately delist the species from the Endangered Species Act. And also to be able to continue spreading information and creating an interactive exhibit about the research that has previously been done on moose decline. Our staff is really excited about adding that into the offerings that we have at the zoo. And overall, we are really thankful for this bill, and thank you all for your work.
Thank you. Any questions for the zoo? Ms. Thompson, would you like to say any words? And Ms. Nash, if you want to comment.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Thank you. Before I step away, I also want to say, as Commissioner Stroman did, that we have a few minor technical changes as well, and Kirk Kadelka from our team would be able to walk you and the committee through that if you so choose.
Great.
Thank you.
Ms. Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you to Commissioner Stroman for bringing up the fact that it was a different process for the Board of Animal Health this year to present to this committee and bring information into you. And I appreciate all the efforts of this committee, all the work that's been done, and I can assure you that the Board of Animal Health, working on the side of agriculture and farm survey, we'll work together with the Department of Natural Resources, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and others to bring any information back to this committee and to implement the changes to our statute. And if there are any questions, thank you, Chair.
Any questions? Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair, Becca Nash, the Director of the LCCMR, Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. I also want to thank you very much for your hard work and coming to agreement, and mostly for acknowledging and recognizing the process that the LCCMR goes through in vetting its projects. So I know that there are going to be a lot of happy project managers out there and a lot of citizens who are going to be pleased with the important projects to protect our air, land, water, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. So thank you.
Well, and on behalf of the committee, I want to thank all of the awesome leaders who just spoke, who were integral in making us get to this bill, which I think is a good compromise. So I want to thank each of you for your work, and look forward to working with you in the future. And I guess we'll get the technical corrections, and then we'll take public testimony, and we'll be nearing the end. Mr. Meyer and Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. We just have a few
technical corrections that are conforming to the spreadsheet agreement that was signed just previously. The first is dealing with the legal fees cancellation. That cancellation needs to occur prior to June 29th due to budget tracking rules, so we can carry forward that $1 million. It says, the bill says June 30th, but we do need to make sure that's corrected so we do not lose that $1 million. Mr. Hagemeyer also spoke about the water recreation account buyback to the AIS fund. The agreement was at $375,000 per year, not at the full $750,000. By going to that $375,000, it will allow us to do increased grants to local water or Lakeshore Association members to provide aquatic plant management grants. The $50,000 for the adopt a dumpster is directly appropriated out of a statutory account. This causes a few administrative problems, and at one point I know it was double tracked in the spreadsheet. I think that is corrected now. Lines set 117.4 to 117.14, as was spoken, the open house days. The agreement was to reflect three open house days, not three total, not three plus the one. Those park days will be the Free Park Friday, Winter's Trails Day, and then a Get Outdoors Day. In addition, the language on 165.7 cites 10A.49. The correct statutory citation should be 10.49, Mr. Chairman. With that, I want to thank you as well for all of your hard work, the committee for all of your hard work in advancing all of our opportunities, and what we do in this bill is great for all Minnesotans. So thank you for everything.
And Commissioner, just to repeat, the AIS surcharge will provide for grants, the watercraft, to lake associations.
Mr. Chair, yes, we will be reinstating those at a level previous, higher level than what they were previously. We're still determining what that will be. We will let you know as soon as possible.
Okay. Any questions? Mr. Kadelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We just have a few technical corrections that we're working with the governor's office for the MMD for the exact details on, and two of them deal with the extensions of dollars for PFA and the freeway previous allocations and how to have them conform with MMD's processes. The other is just to better align some of the new provisions with the divisions. Our agency last biennium went into a new budget system where it went from air, land, and water to our various divisions, and just moving the lead and asthma to the correct division along with the flame retardant provision and the solar study, moving it from UQB to the remediation division. Very technical and quick changes. The last is the waste tire study doesn't have a due date for the agency, and we'd like to add a due date to make sure that we get you something on time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaduk. I was looking for Representative Sundin, and we'll get a date recommended. And any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, in your packets, there are two letters. One is from Kathy Olson of Minnetrista, and it's on the Lake Minnetonka Conservation District. And Mr. Strohmeyer, we will be posting these for public input.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And there's a second one from the Minnesota Native Plant Society, and that's relating to the ditches and roadway exemption. Maybe Commissioner Meyer, as long as you're standing, just before you sit down, I know members have received a number of comments about this particular provision, and could you maybe describe what the DNR outreach will be following up on implementation?
Mr. Chairman, yes, and thank you for working with that language. The challenge that we had in statute currently for this exemption doesn't define what a roadway is, so we've tried to work very closely with the County Engineers Association, and at the end of the day we brought in the natural heritage folks and other stakeholders to try to talk about how do we move forward with this. This will provide a path moving forward on where these threatened and endangered species taking permits will be required. And we'll be working with all stakeholders moving forward about talking about new construction. What we've talked about in the past is where these roadways have previously been examined, their existing road right-of-ways, and trying to make sure that we're protecting the threatened and endangered species as much as possible. So this compromise will provide us a path forward right now, and as we move forward talking about new projects, we will make sure that stakeholders and the committee is involved as well.
Any questions? Thank you. Representative Fisher.
Thank you. And this would be for the citizens group. This information is coming from the White Barrier Neighborhood Citizens Group. What I'll do is I'll summarize portions of it, and also at the same time, as once I get done, I can submit what I've copied off to the Peter Strohmeyer for posting. This group came together to address TCE issues that happened up in the area. Originally, a company up there was permitted for over a 17-year period of putting out 170 tons. Instead, they put out over 1,000 tons of TCE that has serious impacts on people's health concerns. They're very concerned. They say phasing out TCE is not just a White Barrier issue. This is a Minnesota statewide issue and even a national issue. The citizens of Minnesota have had numerous issues with excessive TCE exposure over the decades. Nothing has been done to protect citizens from this toxin. Exposure to TCE is linked to many diseases, birth defects, and more. This impacts different people throughout the state, whether they're in Minneapolis, Fridley, Bayport, Edina, St. Paul, Como area, and parts of the upper northern Minnesota area. It can be found in our water, soil, and air. In addition, the citizens group was advocating for TCE emissions appropriations from a portion of the penalty to go back to the impacted areas to further do further testing, health assessments. They support all communities impacted by such horrible exposures and demand our legislators and government pass laws of such to ensure safety to all citizens and all communities. Minnesota was close to phasing out TCE and becoming the first state to protect its citizens from this carcinogen. Our group appreciates the efforts of local senators and legislators who worked hard to make this happen. They are frustrated that while the citizens had some voice, that they are frustrated that the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and the chemical industry or lobbyists seem to have had more of a final say than local citizens on the ground. It is just sad and extremely disappointing that so many of our legislators fell prey to these voices that would have protected, that are more interested in protecting the love of money and jobs rather than protecting the health and lives of citizens, especially the most vulnerable in our community, our children. We ask all legislators to drive these bills home for all citizens and all communities in the next session and have Minnesota lead the nation. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other people who would like to testify in front of the committee? Mr. Tammet?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Tammet. My wife Pat and I live in Sudan, Minnesota. I'm rather surprised you'd have a couple of minutes for an old miner at this stage of the session, but there's a couple issues here, and I would referred to in the bill 151.30, an activity that conveys or connects waters of the state. You know, Pat and I live in northern Minnesota. We know where the pits are. We know where the lakes are. I'm concerned that some of these old natural ore mine pits that fill with water, danger of overflowing, that there are situations where they become waters of the state. And this sounds like they could just convey that water from that old natural ore pit into a natural lake without any repercussions. I would hope the DNR would look cautiously at water quality before they try to solve their high water problems at the Canisteo pit. That might involve either Trout Lake or Holman Lake or any other waters of Minnesota. And being I have the microphone, I would comment on one other issue. Being Pat and I had a little spare time while we're waiting here the last couple of days to see what's going on, I went to the library and looked up some economic numbers, and you can find gross national product numbers online, Bureau of Economic Analysis, Department of Commerce, and they have information on the state, so they have a whole couple pages for the state of Minnesota, and I thought it was interesting that they say that Minnesota's share of the gross national product, they call it gross regional product, in the state of Minnesota is $368 billion. That's the size of our economy. We have a pretty healthy economy. Then they break it down by industry, and so being I worked in the mines, I look up mining, and they have $2,386,000,000. So let's round it up to $2.4 billion. So Minnesota has a $368 billion economy. Mining is $2.4 billion. You can do it in your head. It's way less than 1%. And I want to make that point. We have great debates about the environmental consequences of mining, and I'd like to point out that mining, hard rock mining, is little more than a rounding error to our great state. And when you count what it cost us to clean up old mining operations, to build the bridge across the Richelieu Pit, $250 billion, we rebate millions every year right back to the mining industry from our property taxes. It's consequential. As you read through the bill, we spend a lot of energy on the Lands and Minerals Department, Minerals Management, School Trust Land. So I think we should consider in the future, I'm sure it's not going to happen this session, the real possibility that hard rock mining is a net liability to the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. My name is Chris Cowan. I usually lobby on behalf of the Natural Resources Defense Council and the Pesticide Action Network, but I'm speaking today just as a member of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership Pollinator Cluster. And I just want to give a quick thank you for everybody who's worked so hard on this bill, the advocates on pollinator and pesticide issues that we work hard on, and then the folks who may not count themselves as advocates, but who provided us with good dialogue and questions about the work that we're doing. And I just want to quickly note that throughout this process, I've been talking about clean water, healthy soil. When we have that, we have happy pollinators. When we have that, we have food to eat. And I'm still not finding many opponents to that basic setup. I was at a funeral in Rochester this past weekend, and I talked to a lot of people that I hardly knew. And once again, the reaction was the same. If you talk to them about clean water and pollinators, the folks out there get it. I mean, even to the point where you'll get thank yous if you're a proponent for this kind of work from folks that you don't know. So we didn't get everything in the bill that we were hoping for. I went through the stages of grief rather quickly, but today I'm happy to see what we got, and we got plenty to work on. And once again, thank you all.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Anyone else? Well, I would like to thank Representative Nelson for participating in the conference committee in your first few weeks as a legislator and give you the opportunity to provide any comment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's been an honor to be a part of the committee, and just kind of learning along kind of at a rapid pace here in the last about 6 or 7 weeks. But, you know, I think just looking at this, the bill that we have before us, I think it's a good good compromise between all parties, and I think most people got a portion of what they wanted. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of people that would like to have seen some more, but I think at the end of the day, I think everyone is probably fairly satisfied with what the bill that we have and go forward. And there will never be a perfect bill. If there was, we would be unemployed and be looking for and maybe that's the perfect world idea. But no, I think it's a good bill going forward, and you know, I've just been an honor to be part of this process here.
Thank you. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to publicly thank you. for your leadership and your mentorship. This is my second term, but my first time in the majority and my first time on a conference committee. And it turns out also a darn good teammate and negotiator these last few weeks as well. So I thank you for putting your heart and soul into this committee and the work that we do.
I want to make sure Representative Fisher and Representative Purcell get an opportunity to comment as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Likewise, I want to say thank you for your leadership on this. It was very inclusive. I appreciate that opportunity. There are some areas that we did some great work on that have been worked that were issues that we had coming before us for the last couple of years. It was nice to get those through. But as been mentioned, there's a few things out there that we'll still need to come back on. Look forward to working with you in collaboration to help move things forward that will help protect the citizens of our state. Thank you for the opportunity.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been quite a ride, I think, as was indicated earlier by members. And we came out probably about as good as we could. So thanks for your work.
And to the folks in the audience, thank you for sitting patiently here as we're waiting for kind of guidance on what happens next and when. We're not in session, so can't really take any action with this information. I guess I can still use the gavel. So thank you, and we look forward to the I want to say one more thing. We have not resolved the issues with Soil and Water Conservation District funding this year. We have, every 2 years that we do not resolve ongoing consistent funding for Soil and Water Conservation Districts, the liability becomes larger and the ability for on-the-ground implementation with a variety of partners gets greater. So that is something we are going to have to continue to try to resolve. It is not every 2 years taking one-time money is not going to be the solution. So that is something we will work on a large issue. We did commit during the regular session to have interim meetings. I expect we will have interim meetings on a variety of subjects, but also in the there is a requirement for reporting, and Senator Ingebritz and I agreed to have meetings, joint meetings, to look at reports on the chronic waste and disease, so we get all the agencies that are involved plus the university following up. And finally, Senator Ingebrigtsen's not here. I don't know if he's available by phone, but I found working with Senator Ingebrigtsen to be an honorable experience, and that I think we were able to go as far as we did because we had a good working relationship. And I hope that we can continue that. I believe that we can, and I hope it can serve as a model for our colleagues elsewhere in the Capitol. So with that, we are adjourned.